Born and raised in New York City, Alan Walker has been playing in clubs there since the mid-80s, with his first show at CBGB's and his first band, Club Iguana. He is the former lead singer, piano, and organ player for the rootsy melodic pop band The Brilliant Mistakes, who were aptly named after a song by one of their songwriting mentors, Elvis Costello. With them, Walker played all over the place in the early 1990s through 2011, including all throughout New York City and Austin's South by Southwest. Before stopping in 2012, they had released one EP and three albums. Alongside his musical career, Walker works full-time in book publishing, VP for Higher Education at Penguin Random House. 2024's A Little Too Late is vibrant, polished, and filled with crafty roots pop melodies. I'll leave it to the listeners to decide exactly how they want to hear it, says Alan, interpreting the songs on their own, adding their own thoughts, dreams, biases, etc.
Hi, I'm Carolyn.
And I'm Bethany.
And we are
Sisters in Song.
So today we want to welcome the fabulous Alan Walker to our show. We are so happy to have you here. Thank you.
Welcome, Alan. Thanks for coming today. So our first question for you is, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into music? How did this all start?
That's a long story. And well, first of all, it's great to be here. Thanks for inviting me and thanks for having me. I started playing piano when I was a kid. Two things happened. I had older brothers and music was always around and I loved the music from the, you know, the moment I could think. It was the Beatles, you know, my earliest memories were Beatles records and first Christmas gifts that I remember were Beatles records. It was just all Beatles all the time. And then I think when I was about 8 or 9, I started taking piano lessons and I took piano lessons from this kind of jolly French woman named Mrs. Chase. I grew up in New York City, but we would go to Western Massachusetts in the middle of nowhere in the hills of the Berkshires. And my mom, there was nothing to do except be outside running around. But she would send me to do something practical and learn piano with Mrs. Chase. And she was very funny and kind of jolly. We'd do real work. She taught me how to read and play, you know, real pieces. But at the end, we would always do duets. And she had a pump organ, too. So there was like, it was like a little bit of work and a lot of fun at the end. So that always kept me doing the work so we could have more fun at the end. So that's sort of what started me being into music. And, you know, I was always loved music and just obsessed with it. And it wasn't until high school that I actually started, you know, the translating like that thing that I did with Mrs. Chase to playing with my friends in a band, which seemed like a completely different, didn't even seem connected, but it turned out it was to some degree. And I got a little Casio keyboard, you know, really, really, really small with like little space between the keys and would play that through an amp. And that was my first keyboard. Started humble beginnings. We didn't even know what a chord was or a key. We just tried to like play songs and we figured it out very slowly and painfully.
So tell us a little bit about, you are releasing a new album on your own as a previous band. So tell us a little bit about that experience.
Yeah, I mean, I've sort of been a band guy all my life. I was in bands, and like I said, in high school and college. And then I started writing when I was about, I mean, there were sort of things you could call writing, but they weren't really writing. They were too disjointed to be songs in before, you know, I was 18 or 19, but I started writing and recording for the first time around 19 with my friends. And we went to a studio and actually sounded like music. So we thought, oh, I guess we can actually do this. You know, so I've been a band guy always. And, you know, I was in a unfortunately named band called Club Iguana. I won't even tell you the story why we were called that, but my late 20s. And then as bands do, just kind of sort of fizzled. And then we started playing with some really close friends and we had no intention of being a real band and wound up being this band, The Brilliant Mistakes. And we were together for almost 20 years and played, you know, did a lot of gigging, you know, clubs, you know, all over the place. So there was that. Yeah. So I think after that band in our, you know, about 15 years ago, or maybe a little less than 15 years ago, you know, as all bands do, kind of found their end or met their end, you know, gradual end. I didn't play music for a while. I sort of just went down here to my basement and just played to my cat Ramona, who purrs after I play. I have a joke when I play live. I say I disappeared for 10 years and just played to my cat. So if you just want to purr after a song, I'll feel right at home. So, but I kept writing, and to be honest, there were the thing about a band is, you know, first of all, there's sometimes usually more than one writer. I've always been the main writer in the band, but there were always other writers. And usually when you play in a band, you're playing to an audience that wants to hear upbeat stuff. So you play mostly upbeat songs, and you have a couple of slow songs maybe on a record or in a set. If you have 12 or 13 songs, you have a couple of slow songs. I wrote as many slow songs and kind of, I wouldn't call them necessarily ballads, but ballad-like songs. And then I realized I had all these great songs that I'd never recorded and that I really loved and I wanted to record. So I reached out to, this is around 2018, this guy, producer, Lincoln Schleifer, who's an amazing musician and bass player and genius guy. And we wound up making a record with some of these songs that I just felt like I needed to record. And then I started streaming them and people who listened to them found me streaming. Anyway, I made this record on my own and we used Lincoln's guys, which were like amazing session professional musicians. It was such a great experience. And we got so many streaming people, you know, people listening to it, that I kind of felt like I could do it again or should do it again. And also mixed with that, there was that whole thing with COVID. When that record finished, I never really played it live. So here I'd been out of the game for almost a decade, made this album that I was pretty proud of, and then never really went out and played it to people. At the same time, I got streamed by millions of people, so more people were hearing my music than I'd ever heard, that I'd ever heard my music before. And so there was all these little incentives and pushes to get me back in the studio and do it again with Lincoln. And, you know, this time it was a little different process. I mean, it was some newer material, some rehashing old slush pile material, which, again, we can talk about, you know, just like old ideas that are never get finished and lay in this like pile in my mind of stuff that needs to be addressed. Mine are mostly on like old cassettes and notebooks, maybe just like a lyric idea, or usually it's a chord. Usually it's an old, it's like a song. It's either a song and the lyrics are okay, but it's missing something like a bridge or it's just like a melodically and chord wise, an interesting song, but the lyrics are just cringy. You know, which happens. I mean, when I was younger, I wrote a lot. I mean, I can't write as much as I used to. I used to be able to write all the time. I could sit down and I would write, which didn't mean it was always good. And I think, but there might've been things that were good in those pieces. So they kind of stick with you. And sometimes you need like 20 years apart from it. And then you come back to it and you suddenly there's like a great lyric sitting there waiting for that song. And it's like magic, and I couldn't do it back then. I didn't have the idea for the song. Songs are funny that.
Yeah, that segues perfectly into our next question, which is, what is your songwriting process? Do you tend to start with the music first? Does the lyric hit you out of nowhere, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, because I know a lot of people and a lot of writers who do it, you know, one way or the other. I'm not. There's no one way for me, but generally, either an idea in my head with a melody and a line, like the line comes, or the some seed of a song, or more often than not, it's a piano and a melody and a line, and the lyrics. To me, the best songs are the ones where the lyrics just like reveal themselves right away. But often it might be like the first two lines of a song, or maybe the first verse and a chorus, and then you have to sort of struggle to kind of figure out what the song is and make it make sense and make it. And that's, and again, like I think when I used to write a lot, I would be lazy and just kind of like words would flow out and they weren't always good. And I'd say, okay, that's a song. But now it becomes a little more of a struggle, like to get it right. Like if I really like this part of the song, that first part, I want to get the rest right. So I got to find the right place in my, you know, find the right mood and the right moment where that just comes, because it's very hard to force it. And I think about that a lot. Like if you sit down and try and write a song about something, I couldn't do that. I have to sit down and just clear everything, and whatever comes will come. It doesn't always.
Yeah, I like that because there's many times that I sit down with them. I want to write about X, Y, and Z. And you're right. I think that a lot of times that's more of a struggle than just like an idea coming to you.
It's almost forcing it, mm-hmm. I think. And we have kind of beat ourselves up a little bit about, well, I'm not writing all the time, but like you say, it's sit down and you just go, I'm going to write right now. Most of the time, for me anyway, that doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of amazing. Like I my old bandmate is a bass player named Eric, who's also a songwriter. He works at ASCAP, and he was just interviewing Bernie Taupin. And I just, when I think about like what he did, he would write lyrics and give them to Elton John. Elton John would read those lyrics and write music to those words. And all I can think of is like, I mean, you can't think of those words without the music now. So what was that like? I mean, just to read those words off a page, they must have had some kind of rhythm and melody and sort of musicality to them in the first place, I would think. But you almost can't like imagine it without the music now. So it's sort of amazing that he, Elton John, would work that way. But it's, you know, everybody's a little bit different, I think. And, you know, those like people we look up to or I look up to, they're all kind of brilliant in their own like very unique way. And that process is who knows? I mean, who really knows where those songs come from? There was I wish I could remember this line, but I think Bob Dylan once compared like songwriting to like this clothesline with these clothespins moving along the line. And once in a while you could reach out and grab one, but most of the time you reach out and you couldn't, you know? And yeah. I forget if he was talking about melodies or lyrics or both at the same time. I'd have to look that one up to find the exact quote.
Fascinating to us doing this podcast, finding what everyone else is, how they write lyrics, how they write melody, and how everything all comes together. So that's why we ask this kind of stuff. Because for new songwriters, it's so neat to see how everybody else, how their brain works, really.
Yeah. I mean, I have a good friend who's a pretty well-known songwriter, and he was in a band, pretty famous band. And he said, the two guys that wrote the songs always believed that a song had to make sense from beginning to end. It had to be concise in a way that wasn't confusing, right? But I almost feel a little different. I feel like the lyrics I love and the words that sometimes I write, it's more important to evoke something than to like actually. I mean, I can't really explain. I'm not very good at explaining my songs, because I think like that's why the song exists, because it says something that's kind of inexplicable in a way. I mean, I don't mean that to sound deep or anything. That's the way my mind works. I think I'm trying to uncover stuff in my own head when I'm writing. So the more conscious I am of what I'm trying to write, the less successful I'm going to be. So again, it comes back to that, like not forcing things and just being open to whatever may or may not flow out of you at that moment. And I think the only trick for songwriters, maybe true for all songwriters, is you just have to put yourself in that place as often as you can, so that will happen. And I also think as you get older, that gets harder and harder, you know. Life happens, you know. You have other things, obviously. And like I said, I'm in the basement. I sometimes come down here and like see these keyboards, and I'm like, no, I don't want to be near them. I have nothing. They're calling me and I have nothing. I'm sorry. I feel bad. I almost feel guilty, you know. But I think once you start it's almost like things cascade. Like once you get an idea, you're just like pulled back again and again, like, and then that leads to more ideas suddenly. And and the more you're down playing, and I mean playing the piano, but I mean playing, just messing around, the more likely you're going to come up with something that's interesting.
Yeah, that's great advice too, because I mean, I agree. I think, so we've done a lot of like reading books about songwriting and that kind of thing, you know, like looking at a story, but there's so many songs that aren't like that. Like you're talking about, like, I mean, if you listen to Radiohead or Vampire Weekend or a bunch of different bands, that they're just, you know, they evoke feeling, but they're not necessarily like a straight ABC story. So it's beginning, middle.
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting. Like, I mean, I'm a big Costello fan, Elvis Costello. My band, The Brilliant Mistakes, that's named after an Elvis Costello song, which has an amazing lyric, called Brilliant Mistake, off of King of America. And you know, he wrote a whole book about where he was and what he was thinking when he wrote certain songs. It was a whole, like 600 page biography, and like only a real Elvis fanatic would get through it. But I loved it. But I loved those parts of it where he was saying, well, this is what I was actually thinking when I wrote that song. He wasn't trying to explain the song. He wasn't trying to, you know, say this song means this. It's like, I think what he was saying is like, the song should mean whatever it means to the listener. And the more I try and tell people what it means to me, I mean, who cares? Like, it should mean something. It might mean something different to different people. I mean, everybody brings different things to their listening. And it's the same with songwriters who are doing their own music, because you can't really be a songwriter unless you listen to music, because that's really what inspires you more than anything, right?
Right. And I love that, because if your music doesn't evoke something in somebody else, then it's all, I mean, it is all for us, but at the same time, it's, if you want it to be more universal, it has to evoke something in your listeners too. So,
and it, I mean, it happens to me just as a, you know, with my own music, I'll write something, I'll even go to, I'll even record it and mix it, you know, produce it, mix it and engineer all that fun stuff. And then the song's there. And then suddenly I start thinking, oh, that's what the song is. You know, it's like, it's still like, it's evoking something, and I'm not even sure what it means or what it is. Or so I think that's okay too. There's nothing wrong with each approach, like the concise thing that tells a story front to back. I've written songs like that, but I've also written songs that are a little more obtuse, maybe. Is that the right word?
Comes back to say, that there isn't one right way, which I think is great.
Yeah,
for sure.
We have to take a minute to thank our sponsor, Brought Farm Designs. Brought Farm Designs offers the most adorable, handmade, washable, durable cat and dog bandanas and collar scrunchies. Our dogs look absolutely ravishing in theirs. Don't you want your dogs and cats to look as cool as ours? The coolest thing is that they hook onto the collar, so you don't have to worry about them falling off or worry about them ending up in someone's mouth. They are perfect and they are adorable. Did I say they're adorable? Go to BF Designs 7. That's BFDESIGNS 7 on Instagram and send them a message and save 10% off your first order with the code Sisters in Song. Our dogs wholeheartedly approve.
What do you struggle with when you're writing?
Maybe I referred to this already, but I definitely struggle with writing lyrics. I mean, I think chords to me, writing music kind of comes naturally. I played with a lot of people who are so amazing at their instruments that it's like a language that just flows out of them. I'm not a great piano player. I'm a decent piano player, and my knowledge of theory is okay. But the less I know, I feel it is almost the better. Like I like being able to find things that surprise me, and chords and turns and playing a C chord and then making a C minor, which kind of changes the key changes in songs. I mean, those kind of writers always interest me, you know, people whose songs, I love like a clean verse chorus bridge verse chorus pop song, but I also like music that has surprises in it. You know, I don't, you know, like seek those out, but I do like it when I find those things. And in a way, the less I know about what I'm doing on the piano, the more I'm going to find those things. It's like, oh, that chord's a C7, a C major 9 chord. No, I just don't want to think about it. I just want to move my find things, and when they sound good, then there's something to be said for that. But as I get older, I you play with people, you have to kind of learn that stuff and kind of know what you're doing and read charts and all that fun stuff. But the less I have to do it, the better. I feel the same way about buttons. That's why you can't really see everything here, but I just have 3 keyboards, a couple amps, and a mic. I don't have any 4-track or any computer equipment. I don't want to clog up my time down here with trying to like produce my own demos. Like my demos, we talked about voice memos before we started the interview. That's how I do demos. I do them on voice memos and only when I'm ready to record them. So I generally just, I don't even want to hear it until I'm thinking about recording something. I mean, hear it played back to me. Yeah. No buttons, you know, no production, just like, come down and play the piano and sing. And, you know, it used to be pen and paper, but now it's Notes, the Notes app on my iPad where I write lyrics.
Completely off that subject, but for a keyboard, for a person who wants to start playing, what would you recommend for that isn't really outrageously expensive, but is there a certain brand you like or something that I could start on?
Oh, interesting. What I'd say is, you should just go. I mean, it's harder to do this now. I don't know where you just go there and try out different keyboards, because it's really like what feels right to you. I have like an old Rhodes, which is like takes like 4 people to move up and down the stairs. So this will, I have a Roland 88 key weighted key piano, which I love. I use it live. Rarely, if I have the opportunity, will I use a grand, because I like the sound of the, I can control the Rhodes when I'm playing it. I mean the electric Roland piano. And I basically use like 2 sounds. I use the grand piano and and a couple of different preset Whirly or Rhodes sounds. And I also have a Nord keyboard, which has great organ sounds, but I don't use that live. So yeah, I just have these things. If I could have, I have a friend who has like a keyboard studio, has every vintage keyboard like known to man, and it's like heaven to me. Like I just want to be locked up in there for like a week, and just that takes some serious space and effort to get to that. So I would just say go to a store and try, you know, play different things. They're all, you know, just say you want to buy a keyboard and you have no idea what you want. And generally you want to have a real piano sound, though. I like Roland. Roland,
yeah.
Roland, okay. That's the best. To me, the sounds that I like best.
I love it. That's good. Cause I'm coming from zero knowledge. So going and playing is always a good thing too.
So thinking of playing, which do you like the best, playing live, writing, or studio time?
Well, that's a hard question. I think I love parts of all three of those things. I mean, writing to me is, you know, just being down here alone, and that creative part is probably, you know, when you write something, that's a special, pretty special thing, but equally special to like take it to other musicians and collaborate with them and hear what they have to say about that song or put into that song. I mean, that's to me, like, that's the magic, I think, you know, hearing your song come from this solo piano idea to some other musicians playing on it. So that collaboration, I think, is in arranging is that's the thing you do before you record. Sometimes you do that while you record, depends on the nature of the recording. So recording is grueling and fun, but it's always rewarding. But you know, I love that part of it too. And live, you know, live is the best thing. Everything about getting there and everything about playing live except the actual playing part, I'm not a big fan of anymore. I've done getting there, parking, you know, lifting your equipment and getting, moving that gear around. You know, I should have played harmonica or something instead of, I think playing live is the hardest thing because there's certain things that are out of your control, meaning, you know, every room has a different stage sound, and really what you hear on stage is rarely what people are hearing in the audience. And a lot of that depends on how good your sound man is or how good the board is and how good the room sounds. And that can be gigs that are just like very memorable and gigs that are kind of forgettable, but that's just part of it. You know, that's part of doing it. For me, it's like, if I only had to do one thing, it would just be sitting down here and writing and never playing to anybody. But what would be the point?
Right.
I don't like yearn to be out in front of people all the time, but once I write stuff and record stuff, I feel like I kind of have to go out there and play it, right? Yeah. You want to get that feedback. That's like the streaming thing I was talking to you about before. I'm like getting streams from like India and Nigeria and all over the world, but nobody, they can't even find my website and have no idea who I am, really. So it's like fun to, you know, you kind of need, you have to go back out and be in front of people and get that instant feedback.
Okay, so we have three questions that we ask everyone, and okay. The first one is, who are your influences?
Oh boy, how much time do we have? I mean, I have so many influences. I feel like my influences come in phases and periods. I mean, I think I started, like I said, I grew up, older brothers, big Beatles fans, Stones, all that great stuff from the 60s and early 70s in my DNA. And I think when I was in high school, the reason we started playing in a band was because we, two closest friends, you know, we had, one of them had this great record collection, and it was all this new stuff that we never heard. It was Elvis, Costello, it was Squeeze, Nick Lowe, all this, you know, XTC, all these great, great bands that were just totally unique. And it was that music that kind of made us want to play music. And so that was deeply influential. But as you go on, you know, as I move forward, like everybody, you have phases of things, you know, rabbit holes you go down. Maybe my biggest, Van Morrison was a big rabbit hole for me. You know, everybody knows his famous stuff, but a lot of people don't know all the great records he made from the mid 70s on into the 90s. And Jackson Browne's a big influence, has come around to be a more recent influence. The new album that I just did, you know, when I sent my demos to the producer, he said something about early Jackson Browne. I said, yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Like, I want it to sound like an early Jackson Browne record, kind of organic and straight, simple, and just it sounds good, but it doesn't sound heavily produced, just kind of organic. Big Star, Alex Chilton, you know, Ballad of El Goodo is maybe the greatest pop song ever written. Who else? So many I could leave it at that. I'm sure I'm forgetting a lot.
Well, we're going to give you another one that's even harder. So
good. I'm ready.
All right. Do you have a favorite lyric or song? And it can be of all time. It can be something that you're currently listening to. It can be one of your own. And what is that and why?
Well, it definitely wouldn't be one of my own. I mean, I do have songs of my own that I love and are proud of. But I would say this, I don't have one favorite song, but I do have a few songs that really stick out, and for various reasons. So again, hopefully we have a little bit of time. It might be long, not too long. I'll try to keep it short. I'm sure I'm going to forget stuff. I mean, I've had many favorite songs, like In the Moment, you know, over the years. I could name every year of the 70s and tell you what my favorite song was. And actually, good story. One of them is, this is a good full circle story. I remember being, it was a summer, like early, mid 70s, probably, maybe, no, or late 70s, early 80s, maybe. And that Steve Miller song, Jet Airliner, was on the radio. And I love that song. It was like, just, I couldn't stop listening to it over and over. Recently, in the last few years, I learned about the guy who wrote that song, great rabbit hole. His name is Paul Pena, or Pena, P-E-N-A, who was this just kind of incredible, like blind black, you know, blues guy who made one album in 1970. And then he made another album in Woodstock with all these great musicians, including Jerry Garcia, all these unbelievable people. And they never released this record. It was a fight with the record company for some reason. And that had nothing to do with him. And he, the guy who produced that record, wound up being a keyboardist in Steve Miller's band. And when he was making that record, he said, oh, I got this song you could do that was this guy wrote like back in 72 that nobody ever, that never like saw the light of day. And so it's kind of a great story. Like Steve Miller writes that song and records it and it becomes a big hit. Supports this guy, Paul Pena, you know, for like the rest of his life. There's a great video of him. He died 10 years ago. I'm not sure. I'm not sure when he died, but not too long ago. But before he died, he played on the Conan O'Brien show with Conan's musicians. Conan has this amazing singing Jet Airliner. The answer I usually give people when they ask me that question is the song by Randy Newman called I Think It's Gonna Rain Today. One of the reasons that's my favorite song is, first of all, it's like maybe the most covered song. One of the most covered songs. Like if you look it up on Wiki, there's at least like 40 to 50 people, like famous people who've covered that song. But there are two versions that kill me. And one is, and they're so different, which to me sort of tells you why it's such a great song. Like you can really have two completely different artists record it. Dusty Springfield, who is one of my favorite singers, sings it. That version is just breaks your heart. It's so amazing. And then there's a version by Peter Gabriel, which is really intense, really quiet, really soft, which I love. Anyway, so that's one. Can I have five? Can I have three?
You can.
Oh. Allow it.
This one's quick. The song that you have to listen in a certain way. You have to listen to it with a lot of volume, whether it's earphones or in your room, with nothing else going on, and in a very quiet place. And it's the song that Nina Simone's version of the song called Lilac Wine. And it's the most incredible song. It's like ethereal. I mean, it's just something just really special about it. There's another song, Richie Havens, a song called Follow, which you guys would be interested in because it's a song that was originally recorded by, I think a guy, I'm going to get this wrong. I think his name was Jerry Merrick, something like that. Okay. Sorry, whoever wrote that song, but it's called Follow by Richie Havens. And the original writer was a poet who sang it kind of like a folk song, very folky. I don't know if you listen to the original and then you listen to Richie Havens version, it's really incredible what he does with that song. It's a beautiful, and I would never write a lyric like this song because it's way too poetic for me. The fact that he even turns these words into this rich a song is again, genius. Favorite lyric, I've got a couple for you and I don't know if I'll remember them, but again, two of my favorite songwriters, I mentioned Elvis Costello. I mean, this is just an example of the kinds of lines he would write that just kind of like get you in the gut, even when you don't know what they mean. But there's a song off one of his best albums, I think 1982 or three, Imperial Bedroom, called Man Out of Time, or Mind. His mind is like a sewer, his heart is like a fridge. He stands to be insulted, but pays for the privilege. To murder my love is a crime. Will you still love a man out of time? And it's like he gets right in there and it's brilliant. I just thought of another one. Big fan of guy named Paul Westerberg, who was the lead singer of The Replacements. There's a line that I've always, a song that I've always loved, a lot of songs of his I love. He's a great and really underappreciated lyricist. There's a song called Aching to Be, which first of all is a great title for a song. She's kind of like a movie who everyone rushes to see. No one understands it, sitting in their seats. She opens her mouth to speak. What comes out's a mystery to be thought of and understood. She's aching to be. So all that is it's a kind of a simple lyric, but the way he plays with that last line makes it magic. The thought behind that, the simplicity of what he's trying to say is so easy for anybody to understand, but like to twist that last line, talked about writing lyrics too. A lot of times lyric writing is, you know, you're just searching for the right words. Like the song, the lyric is already there somewhere. You just haven't thought of it yet. And I often think that's true. You know, so sometimes I have a whole song or a whole verse and there's one line that's missing and I have something else in it that's a filler that doesn't make any sense. It's like, and you're just waiting for the right line to make it all. And more often than not, it's something really, really simple. And you just haven't like let go enough to like see it, or there's too much cloud in your view of what it should be. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly it's there. Did you guys watch that whole thing with the Beatles, the Get Back?
Yes, we just did.
Not very long ago.
Do you remember when George Harrison, there's a moment there, and I don't know if I'll get this right, but John Lennon is, he can't think of one of the lines for something in the way she moves attracts me like no other lover, but he can't think of that line. So John says, just sing something like an eggplant. Like he and George goes, okay, and they play it. And the amazing thing is like the sound of the lyric is already there. The rhythm of the words is already like intrinsic to the melody, and he knows it and they both know it, but they don't know what the lyric is. So you sometimes just throw out something silly and eventually wait for that moment.
Yeah. We have done that before, actually.
No, I think we've all done it. Everybody's done it. You know, it's just I think I had one where I was using the word fertilizer. It wound up being be no wiser. And it was perfect. Like, but it was so simple. It was like, but sometimes when you get the word, the gibberish word, it's like, you can't get it. You can't get past it. You're like, so there's a danger in that too.
Here's our third question for you. What advice would you give to new songwriters or musicians?
Wow, that's a tough one. That's probably the hardest question. I'm terrible at giving advice. I think I'd say, well, first of all, you want to have fun. I mean, it's supposed to be fun. It's if you want to playing with people is really important, like playing with musicians and listening to them, that's really important. Like none of us start playing music to listen to other people play and listen to their ideas. But in the end, when you play it for like 40, 50 years, you realize like that's the most important thing. Like when you're playing in a band, like listening to other people and everybody playing off each other and learning off each other. We would often write songs, my old bandmate Eric and I, and sometimes like we were talking about, like one word would be not right. And he would say, try this word. And I'd be like, that's it. Yeah. And I would do that for some of his songs. It's just like, you have to let go when you're writing. You also, it's important to do that, like when you're collaborating with people. So that's one, maybe that's the most important thing, no matter what you're doing. Just like let it flow. It doesn't matter. You know, none of it really matters. You're just making music. It's supposed to be, it's like, it's play. You're being a kid. Like you want to be a kid. And I mean, I think I wrote like ideas in my, I had hooks in my head when I was little. There was like a Jay Giles song, early Jay Giles. I don't know if you know early Jay Giles, but everybody remembers like the 1980s. Before that, they were an amazing, like, you know, R&B band from Boston and a really talented band. And they had a song called Hard Driving Man. And I remember when I was a kid, I had a song in my head called Car Driving Man. It's just about a guy who drove a car. I didn't have any lyrics. That was just the hook. That's the idea. Like, it's supposed to be kind of like child's play. And the only way things flow out of you is if you kind of like get to that space. And that's what gets harder as you get older.
Yeah, let yourself play. Now it's time for your shameless plug. Find your music. See you live.
Tell us about the new record, when it comes out, what it's called, and all
those
things. Amazing.
Yeah, that's an easy one. So I have a new record. It's my second solo record. It's called A Little Too Late. It's coming out on June 28th. There are two singles that are already out there. You can stream them on any streaming service.
As a side note, Ellen's album is out now. It came out last week on June 28th, and you should check that out on any place that you stream music.
You can stream my first solo record. You can stream all the Brilliant Mistakes stuff. And my early first band, Club Iguana, there's just a lot of like old, you know, recordings we made that I had remastered that are kind of, some are okay, some are a little rough, but they're still fun and there's still some good songs in there. You can find most of it on my website, which is Alan Walker, and Alan is A-L-A-N, alanwalkermusic.net. A Little Too Late is the new album, doing the record promotion stuff now. But we'll have more gigs to come, and you can, that's all on my website.
For our listeners, we're going to have you tell us about the song that we're going to play for them. What song would you like to send out to all of our listeners?
That's a tough choice, but I think I'm going to do sort of a slow one. I'm going to do a sad song because it has the best story to it. There's a song on the album called Only Son. And to be honest, I don't want to tell the whole story because I think if I tell too much, it kind of gives away too much, I think. But I'll say this, I'll give a little more than I would if I was doing a live show. It is based around a true story, or maybe making art out of real life. It's about a friend of my wife's and mine and his mother. And it's really about a mother who loses her son twice, first when he's a little baby and then later on in life. And it starts at the fall of Saigon and ends on the floor of an apartment in Washington, D.C. a few years ago. So it's a sad song, but hopefully it's uplifting in some ways. When we did it, I really loved the recording of this song. A couple things we did. We put some strings on this song. We had actually just two cellos, kind of influenced by Eleanor Rigby, just cellos. But we also had two female background singers, and one of them is Lucy Kaplansky. The other is Teresa Williams, who's Larry Campbell's wife and has a act with Larry Campbell. And they're both unbelievable singers and done backgrounds together before. They really add something special to the song. So I hope you all enjoy it. Like I said, it's the slowest, saddest song on the album, but maybe a fun song to do on a songwriter's podcast.
Alan describes Only Son as maybe one of the saddest songs he's ever written. It's dedicated to the mother of a friend who somehow tragically managed to lose her only son twice. The first time during the fall of Saigon, shortly after he was born, and the second time from an untreated cancer where he was found alone on the floor of his apartment in Washington, D.C. The lyrics tell the rest of the story, or at least attempt to make art out of real life. Here's Only Son.
How can you say a life's been wasted when we're only here for a moment? He would have known that people loved him, but it wasn't enough. Save him. When the nighttime rolls around, and the dreams you might have found will carry on inside our heart. When the darkness sheds its light, is it enough to know we might leave a note or two? Expected to know. she sleepwalks through her days now. Regret found in the alleyways, there's a reminder down everyone. The fate's so cruel, yet it all seems random. Desperation calls for a mother's only son.
Well, we want to thank you so much for taking the time with us today get to know us, learn all about you. We're thrilled about your new album coming out. And thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you both. This has been a whole lot of fun.
Alan was such an awesome guest to have on the show. We had so much fun talking to him. We learned so much. We hope that you will check out the new album, A Little Too Late, anywhere that you stream music. Alan, thank you so much for being on the show. We hope to catch you down the road. We want to say a special thanks to our sponsors, Brought Farm Designs, maker of adorable pet bandanas and scrunchies. Find them on Instagram at BFD7Designs. Remember, you can get 10% off your first order with the code SistersInSong. If you like this podcast, please be sure to like, rate, and review, and share with your friends and family. Why not even put us on your social media? If you're a musician and you want to chat with us, email us at NashvilleHotChickenMusic@gmail.com. We'll look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening to Sisters in Song.